here live on the video on Ustream. This is finally working for us again. We're so excited to have those of you who are with us on the video live for our Tuesday night celebration of life, and those of you who are joining us on the phone call. If you're here for the first time, thank you so much for joining this part of the coaching program. After we finish with a group or with an individual, we invite them to come to this process and to attend for another 40 or so weeks and take on their life, go through each one of these qualities and the assessment measurements and drive these things deeper and deeper into our lives so that we can apply these principles with greater and greater levels of ease. I just want to pull up this picture for those of you who are online. You'll be able to see the cover to the observer's chair. Those of you on the phone, I want to give you a phone number just to consider. An address, www.augmandino.com. That's www.augmandino.com/chair. There's an opportunity there for you to pick up the new book, The Observer's Chair, which will be released. We're just talking with the printer today. Everything looks like it's on schedule for the first week of December. It's going to be a hardcover gift edition of the book. The topic is The Miracle of Healing Self-Esteem. And I mentioned to you because next Monday night, and for 4 weeks, starting on the 12th of November, for 4 weeks, we're going to hold a coaching program on self-esteem. We generally handle it, we usually spend about 1 week in these programs to go through self-esteem. We're going to spend 4 weeks, so we're going to go pretty deep into the topic. So if you ever have that dialogue with yourself about yourself that's painful, and you want to finally root it out of your life, get into the observer's chair, this place where we observe our thoughts and choose to think differently, then you'll want to go to that address that I gave you and pick up 10 copies of the book. 9 of them can be holiday gifts you can give away to friends. Give them the gift of healing self-esteem. You get to keep one of them for yourself, and you get to come to 4 weeks of coaching as a thank you for helping me get this book out into the community. I've shared last week that I have never written with such urgency in my life. This book was written in 30 nights, pretty intense nights, wanting to assist those who are feeling a little crushed. And the topic for tonight is part of this process, in that when we're dealing with mental creation, which we'll get to here in a few weeks, and we're vividly visualizing and we have an idea of how we'd like our life to be, that when we're vividly visualizing, we do so with such vividness that we actually create in our mind a new reality. They even have a name for it. They call it a mental construct. And the challenge we have is in this area we're going to talk about tonight. The first challenge is, okay, so we go from our mind, Ramona's just checking to make sure that we have the right address, augmandino.com/chair, thank you. So when we go into our mind and create this mental construct, this expectation, which etymologically means concrete condition for happiness, then we come into the real world, this tangible world. I'm touching my desk. If you just touch something there in front of you, just so you kind of feel it, this is the real world. This is where we live. Some of us spend a lot of time in our mind, but we can't live in our mind. We live here. This is where we live. And we go in this place, and we go, okay, how is my relationship? Or my relationships. How is my career doing? How are my finances? How is my debt load? How is my cash flow? How are my grandkids? How are my everything that's in our life, this tangible, my car, my house I live in? How do these things stack up to my expectations? Is there anything happening here that's inconsistent with what I thought it should be like, or how I thought it would unfold, or how quickly it would happen? What are the inconsistencies? Because when we see measurements start to turn orange and red in this area we call joy in the journey, that's our topic tonight, joy in the journey, it is generally because of a difference between what our mind has seen so clearly that it's become an expectation, and what's actually showing up in life. Now next week we're going to go into our week of self-esteem, Because what happens is we create the expectation, life shows up differently, and then we turn inward, and we question our worth and our worthiness and our ability and our beliefs. We sacrifice our time and our energy. We do some crazy things to make sure we're okay. And what a great thing for us to know that this is an opportunity tonight for us to measure what's happening as a result of where we're using our mind. This can give us some motivation to make sure that we use our mind constructively, to mentally rehearse and to explore and seek inspiration and problem solve and plan and goal set, to manifest inspired ideas and impressions and solutions to challenges that will ignite our passion and drive our focus and our discipline, effort, and action. Because we need, enjoying the journey, we need that passion. This is where we're actually living life. And are we doing so passion-driven, with our passion ignited, and it's driving us, and we're excited, and we love to be here, we love to be present in our life, or is life a grand disappointment? Is this, you know, gosh, this is not what I expected. You know, by now I thought it would be easier. By now I thought I'd be further ahead. For those of you who are watching this on video, I just noticed that I had the book up on the screen all this time, so here we are. We're back with you. Ramona chuckled. Thank you. So we want to see what's happening. So pull out your assessment, and let's take a look. Take some notes, because this gives us a lot of indication about the difference between where our mind wants us to be, expects us to be. This isn't an idea like it thinks we ought to be there. It actually thinks we are there. It's a huge difference. So this is very disruptive when life shows up differently, because our mind takes the precedent. It wants it to be different. And so we can hate our life, yet, but this is what is. This is the reality of it. But we can hate this because our mind wants us somewhere else. So let's go through these measurements. And let's see in your assessment what is happening. The first measurement is called grateful. It's a characteristic. We do want to be grateful. Grateful means that we have a wonderful appreciation for what we do and what we have, and that we're taking our clay and we're owning it. We're creating the most we can with our clay. We love life. This measurement's quite often orange, sometimes red. When it starts to turn orange and red, we're starting to go, I call it the ugh factor. Everybody say that with me. Just go, ugh. This is not what I expected. So if you see a more orange measurement of grateful, it's not that you're not grateful. You're the observer. If you sit in the observer's chair, you can step back from this and say, shut up. I love my life. But every time it shows up differently, it's going to want to yank you out of this chair and pull you over there and send you into discouragement and overwhelm and frustration and bitterness and anger, because it's showing up differently. Just know that's where it is. It's over there in that other chair, and it wants to pull you over here. That's grateful. Persistent. Fascinating measurement. This measurement is about the doing of doing. Where is our focus? Do we know it needs to be done and we enjoy doing what we do? Or are we focused on doing it so well, we're so over-focused on it, that we are focused on being recognized for what we do? Or we do things out of fear. Like, for an example, if we're dating someone and we wonder if they love us, we might do things so that they can love us. Instead of doing it just because it would serve them, we do it for an ulterior motive. Sometimes at work, we might do things to be seen doing so that we can get that raise we want, or to be recognized and given that position that we want, to receive that attaboy that we're looking for. If we're doing to be seen doing, chances are we won't be focused, totally focused, on creating the most we can in that moment with our ability. We're distracted. We can also, in this measurement, one of the most common reasons for it being orange is that we've got some financial challenges. Some financial challenges, and and we are so over-focused on doing for the purpose of making money. And making money is a great thing. But when our drive for doing something is to make money, we may not be focused on the people involved and blessing their lives and solving their problems. When we solve their problems, it solves ours. If we can make our money as a result of the service we give, that's one thing. But if it's a result of a focus on money, that can leave us pretty empty. And this is a very common challenge, particularly in today's marketplace, where people have either had businesses that have contracted or become irrelevant, or someone's lost a job, or there's pay's been frozen, insurance benefits or insurance premiums have gone up, whatever it might be, that there's a very real need for more money. Just know that when we're focusing on it, we may miss the very opportunity to create it. So just be aware of that measurement. Now that measurement's there. How does that fit with all those other vivid visualizations? Well, our mind sees us with more money, driving a nicer car, being out of debt, having life easy. And all of a sudden, it's not. And so we're focused on trying to figure out how to make it so we can get to that place where our mind already thinks we are. You start to feel that obsessive energy around money. This measurement can also create one other dangerous thing. That when life isn't turning out the way we want, and we turn inward, and we start questioning our worth and our worthiness and our ability, we may actually try to find our worth in how well we do something and how much we get paid for doing it. Our worth or worthiness is based on what we do. It's a very common thing. In a world in which appearances seem to mean a lot and position seems to mean a lot, that when we have the position, we feel more strongly about ourselves. We feel more empowered, more important. But the challenge is when it goes away, we then feel less than. And we want to be okay with ourselves no matter what's going on. We don't want to be subject to what we own or the position that we have. But persistent, when it starts to turn orange, can take us into that place. It can be kind of like a substitute. What's another word for that? A fake form of, or counterfeit, yeah, or surrogate way of feeling better about ourselves. So be careful with that one. If you see it, I'm going to give you some principles this tonight to help you with that one. Effective. This third measurement, effective. Effective, when it turns orange, we're often running around like a chicken with our head cut off. We call it frenetic. That's the chicken. Frenetic, non-goal-directed activity. We're busy, 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 but we're not really moving our life forward. Now, just step back with me for a moment, because almost everybody experiences this. But when it turns orange or red, we're living in this. This is just the norm. We've got so much going on. We're multitasking all the time. Can you feel the energy? If you've got this measurement orange or red, just feel it with me. Go, oh, man, I'm exhausted. It's 7:30, 7:14 here in Utah, and 8:14 in Central, and 9:14 on the East Coast. I'm exhausted. And I say, what did you do today to move your life forward, to move you one step closer to your goals, your dreams? I don't know. I just was busy. You say, yeah. What's causing this? It's very interesting math. It's simply saying, my mind has already seen it. The mind lives in what's called the gestalt. Everything is ever present, which means we can create a Learjet in a nanosecond. Kaboom, Learjet. We can be in the Caribbean in a nanosecond. Boom, I'm scuba diving. We can be in France with wine and cheese. Boom, I'm dining. There's no linear time. It's instant. However, in reality, it's all linear. Look at our watch and watch the second hand go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, tick, tick, tick. That's linear time. And here, everything has to be built in its proper sequence. If we want a Learjet, and we ordered it today, it'd take a year before it came out of the other end of the assembly line. By the time they build it, the interior, put everything together, have it ready for flight, it'd be about a year. That's if we could actually pay for it today. It's still a year. This is a challenge for the mind. Because in this particular measurement, it's dealing with linear time, but it's focused on our ideas. And how do we manage these ideas within linear time? Everybody got that? I'm stuck in linear time. How do I manage my expectations, my beliefs, my ideas, what I want to create? How do I manage those in linear time? Can I properly allocate my time and use it wisely to move me one step closer? Well, when we get frenetic, it's because the mind wants us to do all of that today. It wants the problem solved. It wants us to use nanoseconds in linear time. It's impossible. It can't be done. You can't bring a gestalt into linear time and reconcile the two. It's impossible. But yet that's what the mind is trying to do. So we're just busy. We've just got a million things going on. We're just multitasking with everything and getting very little done, constructively done. So in this measurement, if it's orange or red, it's just saying, I'm having a hard time. My thought processes are not supporting me and taking these ideas and allocating them to a calendar that's reasonable. He wants me to take all of that and cram it in at 10 to 11 o'clock this morning. That's impossible. It might not fit in a year, let alone a day. So it gives us an opportunity to step back, get grounded. Man, everything moves so slow here. The only reason why it moves slow is we're spending a lot of time in our head where there is no time. It's all instant. It's only slow in relationship to how the mind functions. Here, time flies. When you're fully present in the now, engaged in passion-driven action, time flies. Wow, what happened to the day? Whew. We're passion-driven, present in the now. But if we try to reconcile that instantaneous that happens in the mind in linear time, we're going to be terribly frustrated. That's effective. I didn't want to beat a dead horse, but I want you to really understand that one tonight, because there's so many of you that have effective orange that are just driving yourselves crazy. Okay. Realistic. This is an interesting measurement. This is what happens when I have an idea of how I want my life to be, but ideas keep getting in the way. Like time. It's getting in the way of me actually achieving. It's like sitting on the rim of a canyon. Here I'm looking on the rim of a canyon. I've been over to the other side in my mind. I've seen it so clearly. I know exactly what it's like over there. I want to be there. And it might be possible that you have actually been there. You've actually lived over there. So it's not a new place. It's an old place. It's a place where I've been. And I'm sitting here today looking at it going, I don't know how to bridge this gap, this huge chasm between where I am, where I want to be. I just can't figure out how to get this. I can't get the ideas together. They just won't gel. Can you feel the angst from this realistic measurement when it's showing up? Just this high frustration level of not being able to know how to do this. Again, we're driven by an expectation created in a nanosecond applied to linear time. We keep trying to find shortcuts, quick ways, fast solutions. We don't find them. That's why we can't find the bridge. If we were focused on taking the clay we have and creating the most we can with it, we'd actually be building a bridge. And we'd be halfway across the span by now. But instead of that, we're looking for that quick, come on, we've got to find a solution. We've got to solve it right now. So that's realistic. Diligent. Diligence is an interesting measurement. Now, this can go one of two ways. And I know from the assessment, when I'm looking at yours, which way it went. You may not, so I'll share with you both ways so that you can kind of determine which one might apply to you. Diligence says, okay, I am doing the work. I'm actually doing it in linear time. But things keep getting in my way. When Og says in scroll number 3 on persistence, I'll keep my eyes on the goal above my head and I'll ignore the obstacles at my feet, for I know where dry desert ends, green grass grows. Yet, we see these obstacles, and if we are stumbling on them, We're allowing them to be there in our life. We're not stepping over them and past them. We're just allowing them to be there. For an example, we need a car for sales, but we're not taking care of our car. We're allowing things to happen in our life that are impeding our ability to actually do the work, to live in and enjoy this life. We're going to have an orange measurement. So one is allowing those things to happen. So just to reflect on your life. If this is orange, just go, what in my life keeps me from producing at the level I would like to? What's keeping me from doing that? Is it my wardrobe? Is it my bank account? In this sense, could it be a relationship? Not the intrinsic value of a person, but just the challenges with the relationship. And am I allowing those things to happen? Am I enabling those things to happen? How clearly am I about moving past and correcting those issues? That'd be one side. The other side is that I'm blaming them. I'm blaming them. In other words, if I had a different car, if I had more money, if I had a different companion, if I had a nicer home, if I had more education, if I had more of something tangible, concrete, measurable, comparable, if I had something like that, I'd be producing at a higher level. So in one case, we blame it. It's the reason why we're not experiencing it, or we're allowing it to keep us from taking the actions necessary to create a different outcome. Important measurement. Last measurement is vigilant. Vigilant asks us the question, do we value the things that we're currently doing in our life? Do we find these behaviors, these actions, this career path, this relationship, is this adding value to not only my life, but to the world? Does this matter? And when this measurement turns orange, and it's orange a lot, especially in today's world, where our mind has taken us, we've seen possibilities, and we'd like to be living at that level. We'd like to be contributing at that level. We'd like to be participating at that level, and we're not. Then there's a chance that it's just an ache in our heart. When Og says, within thee burns a flame, passed down from generations uncounted as heat, is a constant irritation of my spirit to be better than I am and I will be? This is part of that flame. Having an orange measurement isn't a negative. It's just an opening to go, wow, what is it about my life that I don't feel is measuring up to what I'm supposed to be doing with my life? Am I falling short? I'm meant to do so much more than this. You can feel that. But what we don't know is whether it's our life circumstances that are creating that, or whether it's only a difference between our expectations and reality. We don't know that yet. That's why we want to start applying true principles, and as we apply the principles, then we can answer that question. You may be in the wrong place, doing the wrong thing. It's possible. Absolutely. You also might be missing the mark. You might be looking for something that's more tantamount to that mental construct, that fantasy, that may not exist on this planet. And so we're putting an unrealistic expectation on reality to deliver something that lights our fire that may not be available in tangible reality. So we want to make sure we don't miss the mark. I'm going to start with that one and work our way up. I want you to write this down, if you would. And you'll find this in your intentional creation studio. This is quality number 5. It's a beautiful, the studio, so fun. There's several hours of material in there, especially on this particular area, in terms of taking a look at our life and saying, and I believe I wrote this in the book. I may have taken it out in the last edit. I'm trying to remember. I apologize. I know it's in the studio. It's less important what we do for a living than how we do it. It's really important to say. It's less important what we do for a living than it is how we do it. I just don't feel fulfillment in this job. is, do we step into people's worlds and listen to them? And take down their walls of resistance and have that flood of cooperation come out? It's been my experience that we can step into a person's world and intrinsically validate them and give the gift of understanding in almost any profession anywhere on this planet. Yet some of us will pack up and go to Africa to do it. We will. And the challenge is we'll get there and we'll start doing this noble work. It is noble. And we'll bring with us all the baggage that we had over here, and pretty soon we don't like that either. That's the risk. It wasn't what we expected. By the time we're dealing with a skin disease and mosquitoes all the time and terrible water and food, and we've got some disease or sickness or illness, we're going, whoa, what am I doing? What am I doing? Now, I'm not here to suggest we shouldn't go on mission trips and serve and bless people all over the world. I absolutely think we should. We just don't want to look at those things as the solution to why I might be feeling bad about my life. Because we can serve here just as powerfully. And standing in the grocery store line, the bank line, meeting someone at church or a community event, talking to someone on the telephone, getting an inspired idea and calling them. We can serve so beautifully here. And it will be in the service that we'll begin to find the joy in the journey. So just make that note. It's less important what we do and more important how we do it. Because we can find tremendous satisfaction in anything. Number two, as it relates to a person's job, I'm going to ask you tonight to fall back in love with what you're doing for a living. Some of you are involved in home-based businesses, and sometimes the jobs get bad raps. You know, I've got a W-2 job, I got W-2, whatever. You know, we speak about it with such resentment and resistance, disdain almost. And yet it's the vehicle that's paying the bills to get us from here to there. We're going to want to tonight to fall back in love with what we do. That doesn't mean you're going to be there forever. It just means while you're there, show up and lift and build. Be the sunlight in the office. If it doesn't have it, then become it. It'll be attractive. It'll be contagious. You can infect the whole office with optimism if you chose to be that player. However, if you don't do it here in your job and you want to do it somewhere else, the truth is that what you don't like about this is exactly what you won't like about the next thing. So just know, fall back in love with what you're doing. And do it with everything you can. Now, there's a couple reasons for this. I'll give you the most powerful one. Because when we fully show up in whatever we do, we're being our true self. We're spending time with us. Our natural genius. We're being genuine. On the other hand, if we're holding back and playing half speed, we're going to spend a lot of time with negative and not depressive, but they could be depressing, but negative thought processes. The body's going to be releasing chemicals that's going to exhaust our cells. We're going to be exhausted at the end of the day from playing half speed. The most exhilarating, energizing thing we can do is to fall in love with what we're doing and bring all of us to it and spend the day with ourselves accomplishing tasks, and emphasize, regardless of remuneration or recognition, because we're not doing it for them. We're doing is we want to spend time with ourselves. This is the skill that is transferable. Once we learn how to fully maximize our own gifts and talents, we can take that anywhere, anywhere. Any home-based business, any other career, we can take it with us. But we're going to want to own this piece. We're going to want to own this piece. So if you have been disliking your day job, if you have one, or your career, fall back in love with your job. Fall back in love with connecting with people. Fall back in love with doing power sessions and being fully present and having fun seeing what you can create when you're fully there, and spend time with yourself. Now, let's go to the concept that is really one of the great healers of self-esteem, But it happens in this particular quality, joy in the journey. And it's tied into grateful, it's tied into realistic, it's tied into effective, it's tied into persistence. And that is owning our own clay. I believe that there are three fundamental shifts that success requires us to make if we want to be successful. To success, happiness, peace of mind. If we want to do that. Fundamental shift number one is we stop making it about us. We're totally available to listen to another person. That's intrinsic validation. That's a key piece. A second one is very difficult, and that is to give up our unhealthy habits of thinking and to stay in constructive thought. It's the decision to let go of ease. I'm focused on people, then I'm letting go of ease. I'm choosing to engage in life. This is a tough decision, because most of us in the society are trained to work until we retire. There's a destination we want to reach. I just want it to be easier, more comfortable, less stressful, more time freedom, more financial freedom. Well, how about if we just choose to engage and embrace principles and connect and serve and create value everywhere we go with everyone we meet and live a life of significance, of contribution? That's a major decision. The third decision is to stay fully present in the now. That's a tough one. I just did a group the other day, and I've had 8 people out of 3,500 who have done this in the first week, and we had 2 in one group. Oh, my goodness. 30 people in the group, and 2 of them did power sessions completely as outlined the first week. It was so thrilling. And did they create miracles? One had a 25% increase in their revenue. Oh, my goodness, 25% increase in a week just by being fully present and seeing the opportunities and acting on them. The fourth one is this one. And this is the most significant in terms of implications on self-esteem. And it's the decision to own our own clay. To say, okay, if you're watching on the video, you'll see me holding my clay. It's a 10-pound block of clay. If you're on the telephone, just hold your 10-pound block of clay. We did this in the coaching session, but just take a look at it. Because it's been my experience that we don't make this decision once. We have to make it every time our expectations show up and want to question the value of what we have. We make this decision. This is my clay. And I'm going to become aware of what it is, my strengths, my challenges, my warts, my burps, all the mistakes I've made. This is my clay. All the good things I've created. And I'm going to choose me. I'm going to choose this. I choose me. Truth is, we don't get any other option. Because we can keep trying to be her, because she's got beautiful hair, or her, because she's got a very shapely body, or him, because he's got great cars, or him or her, because they've got a great career. Yeah, we can want those things. But in looking there and going, ugh, look at this, yuck. By doing this piece, yuck, we're dismissing our clay. It's the only thing we have to build with. We can't build with theirs. We can only build with ours. And so we take our clay and we choose to take it and say, I'm going to create the most I can with my clay. Wow. That's a decision made in this measurement. Grateful. I'm going to be grateful for the gift and grateful to the giver of the gift. That's what this grateful is going to mean. I'm going to show that I'm grateful by taking what I have and creating the most I can with it. So this could be the most important one in terms of self-esteem, a decision. So those are our 4 decisions: connection with people, choosing to go down the road of engagement and creation instead of ease, being present in the now, and owning our clay. These are 4 huge decisions to assist us in growing. I just had an idea to share with you after this, sweetheart. This is a great, the four this, that when we make this decision and we take our clay and we decide to create the most we can of our clay, we're actually given more clay. That's a great thing to know. But as I wrote in the new book, the giver of clay is not going to give us more. It's not going to give more to the person who isn't valuing what they already have. So if we're not taking and creating the most we can, why would we ever expect the giver of clay to give us more clay? I don't like this. Could you give me more, please? Versus, I've done everything I can do with this. I've maximized it. Oh, thank you. More clay. That's a beautiful thing. So that's a piece that happens in joy in the journey. We actually are finding joy in creating with our clay. We no longer look at everybody else's, because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Og says, I'm here for a purpose. I'm holding this clay, looking at it. I'm looking at this clay. So I'm here for a purpose. And that purpose is to take my clay and create the most I can with it. I have a fiduciary responsibility to this clay. This is a beautiful thing to know, because many of us have been confused. But I want more than I have. You're supposed to want more than you have. Not something other than what you have. You're going to want to make the most with what you have. So that's the beautiful thing. I want to create the most I can with what I have. That's how we honor the gift. We're grateful for the gift. We honor the giver of the gift by taking it and creating the most we can with it. They say that our life is God's gift to us. What we choose to do with it is our gift to God. What are we going to do with this? Create the most we can with it. Now, if we're taking this posture of creating the most we can with our clay, is there any possibility in this journey that there might be a lesson or two we're supposed to learn? I was watching a speech that was just loaded up on the Og Mandino YouTube channel that I gave to an event called Three Men and a Lady. Chantel, I'll put that together. That was fun, wasn't it? Thank you to her for putting that event together. And I was sharing there that the same power that gives us clay is never going to grant to us. Never going to grant to us that which would rob us of stretching and growing. I'm sitting here playing with my clay like I'm molding it. We're going to be molded and shaped. And we'll want to surrender to this process of molding and shaping. Og talks about this in the scroll too. He says, I'll love the rain, for it cleanses my soul. I'll love the night, for it shows me the stars. I'll endure sadness, for it opens my heart. I'll take on challenges, they're my due. We go, wow, what are we talking about here? Well, part of taking this clay and creating the most we can with it is being given growth opportunities. Some people call those growth opportunities challenges. Og talks about that. Let me grab my book real quick. It's at the end of scroll number 4 that he talks about this. And this is what he says. He says, I've been given eyes to see and a mind to think, and now I know a great secret of life. A secret of life. Every time I hear Og say that, my ears perk up. A secret. Okay, a secret of life. For I perceive at last that all my problems, discouragements, and heartaches are in truth great opportunities in disguise. I'll no longer be fooled by the garments they wear, for mine eyes are open. I'll look beyond the cloth, and I'll not be deceived. So when's the last time we looked at a challenge and said, wow, I'm being stretched. I'm growing. This is an opportunity. I've shared this a number of times today in coaching sessions, that when we feel stuck, being stuck can sometimes be a blessing. It reminds us of what it feels like. Ooh, there's fear here. There's anxiety here. Now I wonder, is anybody else experiencing this kind of a challenge? I'll put them on my path and I'll serve them, because boy, am I acutely aware of how that feels. I'll be able to hear so much better today. I'll be able to ask questions nobody else would think to ask, because I know what it feels like to be stuck, as of today. This is a great thing to know. So when we're looking at this growing, we are going to be stretched. That introduces us a topic called sorrow. Gehiel Gibran wrote the book, The Prophet. In that book, he talks about, tell us of sorrow and joy. And he basically said that when joy is sitting at your board, which means sitting at your table with you, that sorrow is asleep on your bed, that they're inseparable. One is awake while the other sleeps, and the other's awake while the other one sleeps. He talks about this beautiful lute or flute that we're playing, and was it not harrowed out by knives? The cup from which we drink the wine, was it not fired in a furnace? And so it is with us, that we have the capacity to experience joy equal to how deep our heart has been harrowed out by sadness. It serves a purpose. Now, if we said, I don't want the purpose, Og tells us to accept obstacles that, for which others have failed. And the reason why he tells us that is that sorrow, the twin brother or sister of joy, is going to show up in our lives. We cannot want life to be as we see it in our mind. Where I wrote about it in the book, the section is on gratitude. Matter of fact, maybe we ought to go there. Here's a copy. I'll go there for just a moment. I wasn't going to open this tonight, but I'm going to. This is Today I Begin a New Life. And the section is dealing with our mind. And we go to gratitude, and I describe this in a fair amount of detail and with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek so we could all kind of laugh at ourselves. I will be there in just a moment. Here we go. See, when we use our mind vividly and we go into the future and we want everything to run smoothly and beautifully, we want to understand clearly that when we're in that space, it's much different than tangible reality. It's on page 164. It says there that when we're in our mind, no one has bad breath or body odor. No one passes gas or burps. There's always oodles of money and no bills to pay, no work to do, no schedule to keep. We never get ill or have any challenges or accidents. We never get discouraged, frustrated, disillusioned, or angry. It's true when it's up there. While in fantasy, our car never breaks down. We never have to work late. Nothing ever gets spilled. Everyone gets along. There's always love at home. Committed relationships are filled with courtship, romance, and intimacy. Babies never poop, throw up, or cry. Everyone does what they're supposed to do when they're supposed to do it. There is never an emergency or imposition. The sun is always shining, and everyone always drives courteously. And Ramona can chuckle at that one. The truth is that that's in our mind. We don't factor those things into fantasy. In real life, every one of those things happen. And if we spend real life trying to avoid those things, we're going to have one miserable life. Og tells us to embrace them as they come, because they are part of life. When we catch the vision that frustration and challenges and cash flow issues and things that can happen are just part of life, this is just part of the journey, and if we can say, what can we learn from this experience? We'll be able to be more effective in inspiring others to do so, and we're better equipped to step into their world and understand what they're experiencing. So let us, when those moments are happening, just go, wow, this is not fun, but this is life. This is tangible reality. This thing that's creating the sorrow, the angst, the stress, it's just part of life. Now, if we spend any time at all resisting it, trying to have it not be, resenting it, angry that it did, or rebelling against it, it's energy we could have spent solving it. And it's interesting, we're going to have to get through it. So the question is, do we just dive in and take it on, because it's the next challenge? It's my dude, Og says. Or do we resist it? I'm going to suggest to us that we would be really wise if we just saw life as, this is just part of life. This is part of being here. We're just not here very often. We're usually in our mind. But But the more time we spend here, the more we realize that's the case, and the more we can learn to find joy in the journey in spite of sorrow, and certainly when there's joy. So joy in the journey. Sorrow is a huge part of this piece. Well, I'm hoping that what we've shared tonight can assist you. The most important thing tonight is to take your clay and choose to own it. This is your clay. And as you examine it, I just know there's going to be some things there you don't like. There's some things in my clay I don't like. I was just watching this videotape and seeing this fat man walking around on the stage. I mean, that's how I can think about myself. I say, well, if you don't like your weight, then let's do something about it. Ramon and I started that again on Monday. A little exercise and eating a little better, and yeah, it's time. We can take on those things we don't like and do something about them, but let's not let them beat us up or tear us down or make us feel worthless or hopeless, especially hopeless. So let's own our clay. That's a really important piece. Two, let us fall back in love with what we're doing. Let's just fall in love. Let's make sure that as we're living life, that we live it instead of wanting to be somewhere else. So we find out whether something is bad. Because I've had clients, we've worked through this, and we found out where they were. It was really the wrong place. It wasn't a good place for them. They need to be somewhere else. So we help them go somewhere else. And lastly, sorrow is not a bad thing. It's just sometimes painful. It's just part of life. It is as much part of life as is the joy that we seek. May we have the courage in those moments of struggle to find the good, to learn from the experience, learn how to press forward. When we know how, we can be an inspiration to everyone else so that they can do likewise. And in doing so, these measurements will start to shift. And when they shift, guess what happens to self-esteem? When we're actually enjoying this experience, we're actually living here with our clay, being who we truly are, we all of a sudden start to value ourselves, our ability, our worth, our worthiness. It's a beautiful thing. This is one of the major healers of self-esteem, is finding joy in the journey. Well, I do hope tonight assisted you at some level. I come to these occasions concerned about where you might be, challenges you might be facing, because we all are. Some of them are very, very painful. There are some days when I finish coaching sessions that I just fall to my knees. Some people are just having overwhelming experiences. I was on the phone just before I got on the call at 6 o'clock tonight, and it was like the fourth or fifth phone call today with this client in New York. Owns a large brokerage firm. It's below 34th South. It was underwater. This multi-story building, but the lobby had 3 feet of water in the lobby, and the basement was full, and all of their phone equipment's in the basement. This is a going concern with lots and lots of brokers and callers that are setting up appointments and senior partners and all. One of the senior partners has a home a block away, and the building was condemned. He went in to get his stuff, and the police chased him out of his building. He couldn't get his own stuff. Isn't that crazy? I was talking to several of the big brokers that I'm coaching with today, and they've got one was in an apartment, and he had electricity, but he has no heat and no hot water. So he's set up kind of a convection system to keep his place warm, boils water in the morning, and had to take a bath. And he's trying to figure out how to stay alive financially in that environment. This was totally unexpected at this level. I could go down the list of each one of the people in the firm and the challenges that they're facing. Some of us, we get concerned with I don't want to make it light, because many of us have challenges that are very painful. Just know there are a lot of people suffering, and we'll want to be focused on how we can serve and bless other people's lives. It helps us keep our own suffering in perspective. I can't think of anything I can complain about today when I think about what my good friend and his firm is dealing with. Here's the kicker. They were told today that their building will not be open until after Christmas. Imagine? After Christmas. It's November 6th. That's 7 or 8 weeks from now. It's already been closed for over a week. This is just devastating to this firm. We've got a strategy meeting in the morning to put all these people at phones and desks in different places of the city and reignite and, in this moment of crisis, create something exceptional in this firm. This morning when I called, it was, we got to lay everybody off, and I don't want to do that, and we just got to go into survival. No, let's not go into survival. Let's go into creation, because I could feel from some of the brokers I was talking to that they were coming alive. These were amazing human beings, and what an opportunity for them to become exceptional in the middle of a firestorm. How about if we all do that tonight? We go, what is happening with my clay? How about if I just choose to rise above it and I choose to be exceptional? And I look for opportunities to create the most that I can. And I find joy in whatever circumstances I'm in. I serve people, step into their world and love them. What would happen if we made that choice tonight, no matter what's going on in our life? What would be different tomorrow? How much more joyful would we be? How much more productive would we be? I hope that's what we would do. With these principles, we can. Let us not get stuck in that chair over there. Let us get here in the observer's chair. Let's take this on. Let's make a difference this week. And let's come back next week to go a little deeper into self-esteem and to bless your life. If you'd like to spend 4 weeks with self-esteem, go to www.ogmandino.com and get the 10 books. It's $169.50. Plus, I think, $15 to ship them. That's $184.50. And you've got 9 Christmas presents and 4 free weeks of coaching. So take that on if that would be of service to you. We'd love to be able to serve you in that way as well. Well, thanks, everyone. Have a great night. Yes? Oh, what scroll should you study? With Joy in the Journey, there are a couple of them we might want to consider. Ramona just asked which scroll, and the scroll is Scroll 10. I go to Scroll 10. It's called The Salesman's Prayer. Og talks about, I seek not for gold or garments or even opportunities. Instead, I seek to acquire ability equal to my opportunities. It's about taking what I have and creating the most I can with it and discovering that if I do that, more opportunities open up to me. I'm given more clay. It's a beautiful thing to do. I would read that one. And if it would serve you, I would also go to Scroll number 3. I'll persist until I succeed. You know, the young bulls are tested in the fight arena in a certain manner. Each is allowed to attack a picador who pricks them with a lance. And the bravery of each bull is carefully rated based on his willingness to charge in spite of the sting of the blade. And I know I'm tested by life in like manner. So if we just keep charging forward, we will succeed if we're persistent. Small tasks repeated can accomplish any deed. That's Scroll 3, powerful scroll. Have some fun with that one in Scroll 10. See which one speaks to you the most and study that one this week. And do it three times a day. Not because you have to. Because you want to, very first in the morning, raise your awareness up so you know which chair you're sitting in. You want to read it at noon to stay in the right place, and read it at night so it seeps into your mysterious mind, as Og calls it, so that we're more conscious. Because you don't want to be unconscious, because unconscious inevitably will be over there in the other chair. We'll be in discouragement, despair, and overwhelm. That's where unconsciousness takes us. Consciousness gives us courage, clarity, wisdom to make good choices and wise decisions. So let us be found here in this observer's chair. Well, thanks everyone. Have a great night. And we'll look forward to being back with you next Tuesday. Now, I want to mention one last thing in closing on the calendar, just a little bit of housekeeping. On the 20th of November, we will not be having this class. That's the week of Thanksgiving. Ramona and I are traveling to New York to be with our daughter, who made it through that storm, and with our son in Washington, D.C. We're going to see some grandkids and spend Thanksgiving out there with them. So we will not have this class on Tuesday night, the 20th. So we'll look forward to being with you next Tuesday on the 13th and then back on the 27th. Well, thanks, everybody. Have a good night, and we'll be back with you next week.